I want to welcome into studio somebody that we've been talking about a bit on Grassroots Radio, just a little bit, a classmate of mine for Leadership Program of the Rockies 2012, the one and only Mary Jo Tinlin, candidate for House District 33. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Now, I got to ask you this question. 2012, the class of 2012, it was the best class ever.
Absolutely.
There hasn't been one since that can match up to it, and there hasn't been one. There wasn't one previously.
Well, we're a little biased, aren't we?
Of course we are. Yeah. That was our class. I mean, we've got Jill Vecchio, Molly Vogt, Kim Munson, you, me. We've got Randy Corporan. I mean, we got a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, we've got a lot to boast about. All right, so you're going to run for House District 33. You and I have spent some time talking about this. What made you decide to throw down?
Well, it's something that's been on my heart for almost a year, talking to people and just getting the idea of what it would be like, and specifically working with people that have actually had the job. I actually even spoke to my now competitor, about this, and it just got onto my heart to do that. But what really sort of pushed me over was after looking at what had not been raised in terms of funds by the SOS reports, the Secretary of State reports, we saw that the race really wasn't being run like we thought it was. And I had stepped back because I thought we were going to have a good candidate and we were going to make it and we're going to get the seat back. And I just saw that momentum was not happening. You know, like John Kaiser's race, he's already raised $30,000 or $40,000. And so I was inspired by that to see that it could be done. So that's why I jumped in before we got to caucus and before we got to assembly to try to establish myself as the candidate that really can get that done and get this seat back for us.
Well, yeah, and you know, Jason and I have talked about this, so it's no secret really where we stand on this particular race. But Dave Pickett ran before, and I like Dave. I do. I think he's a great man. I like him very much. I don't think he's the right candidate. I think you are. Okay? And so, we interviewed him when he ran last time. He made some comments on Grassroots Radio supporting SB 200. I mean, that's a fatal flaw in my book. And for those of you that don't remember, that's the bill that gave us the health care exchanges in the state of Colorado. We'll be talking about that at the 6:30 hour because it's just a wreck. But anyway, there were some things that I just didn't like. He ran, he lost. Okay? So let's get some fresh blood in there. Let's get somebody who really does have the fire in the belly, and let's go to it.
Right. The thing that I think I can bring to the race is the fact that I'm 100% dedicated to this. I, pretty much put away everything except the mom part to be able to walk and meet people and appear where I need to be and talk to people and raise money and just 100% dedicated to doing what we need to do to get the seat back. Because it's a fight, and it's a swing district. It's very close in terms of voter registration. We have a lot of unaffiliateds in the district, and so we really have to put our all into this, and I hope that, we're going to come out on top this time.
Well, we do. And so who's your opponent in 33, the Democrat?
Diane Primavera.
Oh, geez. Yeah. All right. So this is a must win. This is a must win for the Republicans. And again, I'll go back to it. We have to win 5 House seats in order to take control of the House. We do. We have to net 5 wins. We can't lose any and then win 4. That doesn't cut it. We have to net gain 5 in the House of Representatives. So Diane Primavera, yeah, I would very much like to see her go. The idea that we have you running against her would be good. So how are you going to highlight the differences?
Right. Well, I like to think of myself as the Liberty candidate. I am the one that really promotes freedom for the people in the district, and I am also the constitutional candidate in this race because I really believe that we absolutely have to preserve the protections that we have in our Constitution for everyone in Colorado and in the United States, obviously. And so I just really want to fight for the freedom for people to get out from underneath the oppression that we have as in terms of the government now. You know, the government is the boss for so many people, and I think that there are some people that are comfortable with that, and we aren't going to be able to reach those folks. But when we can point out to people how overbearing the invasion of the government is in their life, they will see that they can have a change and they can have a voice, actually, down there, at the assembly. you know, when we look at Diane's voting record, she votes almost 100% of the time with her party, even though only 30% of the people in the district are registered Democrats. I just can't imagine that represents the people that she has been voted into the district by, that represents her voice properly. And I'm going to do that when I become the lawmaker there.
So the district basically is made up a third, a third, a third, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, roughly.
Well, roughly,
it's kind of 30, 30, 40 unaffiliated.
Okay, 40% unaffiliated.
It's a big piece of unaffiliated, yes.
All right, so how do you plan to message to those folks?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's obviously going to be the key.
Yep. Right. Well, I mean, you know, my big issues, I think, are the fact that we have made the political climate so unfriendly to families here in Colorado. You know, with all the regulation we have, all the licensing and fees, and just the minimum wage bill the resolution just came down to support the increase in minimum wage. I know that's a small number of jobs in total, though, but that is a job killer. You know, we have Obamacare that's going to create a part-time job for us. Now we have the executive order that allows for paying salaried employees overtime. That's going to create an hourly workforce. I mean, we're just killing jobs over and over and over, and that kills jobs for everybody in whatever party you're in. It doesn't matter what letters behind your name. That kills it for everybody, and it hurts families. So we've got to loosen up the regulations and be able to give people their individual liberty and opportunities back so that they can provide for their families. And then the other piece of it that I think we absolutely have to preserve, and that's a huge issue for me because we have kids, is this education. What's going on with education and the changes with Common Core? Having a standardized curriculum across the whole country makes no sense. It's the way to simplify education, and it takes so much freedom away, a freedom of choice for parents and their kids, but it also takes choice away from teachers in how they teach and what they get to teach. And we have such great educators that are, you know, actually being hurt by that curriculum. I really would have liked to have seen Lori Sane and Vicky Marble's bill go through that would have allowed for that delay. So that we could have taken some time to make sure and see what the real effect would be. I was sad that that got defeated.
Yeah, I was too. And, you know, I really liked the way that whole thing came together because that was a group of moms.
Right.
It was Democrats, Independents, and Republican moms that care about the education of their children. They got together. Senator Marble put them with a bill writer. They came up with it. This was not Senator Marble's bill. It was the mom's bill. That's why it's been called that, because it actually was. Mm-hmm. What did the Democrats do? Sent it to the kill committee, and they killed it.
Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560, The Source.
Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark. We have in studio Mary Jo Tinlin. She is a candidate for House District 33. This is a must-win seat against the incumbent Diane Primavera. And Diane Primavera is a Democrat. She votes 100% of the time, pretty much. Pretty much?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Okay, 99%, 97%. You know, on a scale of 1 to 100, the Democrats all vote in blocks. They're... On a scale of 1 to 100, their variance is 6 points. Six. 6 points. So I feel pretty comfortable saying she votes with the Democrats pretty much 100% of the time. So that is a must-win seat. We have got to get rid of Diane Primavera. Now, during the last segment, we were talking about Common Core. That is a huge issue, and that is an issue that is bipartisan. Democrats don't like it. Republicans don't like it. People who care about the education of their children don't like it.
That's right. You know, when you look across the country, the places that have voted to adopt it, almost half the states have actually also voted to delay it and to decide what they're going to do about it. I think that says a lot about the fact that we have got to really step back and make sure that this is the right thing, which I don't believe it is. Again, I think it takes away choice in education for parents. I think it penalizes children because they end up learning, you know, less and inaccurate, as we've seen in some of this curriculum. It's not even right, or it's twisted, or, I mean, some of the literature, I mean, I've read some of the literature that they are proposing to have for some of the kids to read, and I wouldn't even read some of this stuff. I'm humiliated to think of my daughter reading some of the things that they're proposing, and I agree with you, that is not a partisan thing. That's just a mom thing.
Oh, I know, and I remember we played the clip, tried to. It's basically a bunch of beeps because it is so explicit that it's pornography. I mean, that's all it is. And I mean, there's one book in particular that was trying to create empathy for the pedophile.
That's exactly the part I'm thinking of. I wish I could get that out of my brain.
Yeah, well, let's move on. Let's get that. Obviously, I know that you are a Second Amendment enthusiast because you and I have actually been shooting together.
Yes, we have.
And so we went down to a place outside of Longmont, popped off a bunch of rounds, had a great afternoon.
Absolutely.
So you're very, very skilled. Do you have an instructor's certifications?
I don't, no.
Okay.
But I
wasn't sure. That's why I wanted to ask.
Yep. But, you know, that's one of those issues that I have changed on from over time. You know, I didn't grow up around firearms at all. I didn't know anything about it. And so once I started to learn about it, I really, really, I think it's fun, first of all, but it also truly underscores the need to preserve our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, and also to have people have a choice. I mean, when we were in here last time, talking about our business that we used to be a part of, just understanding that people have choices in how they defend themselves. They can use a firearm if they wish to. There's also several other ways to defend yourself. But as a woman, we have to be able to protect ourselves. And, you know, we talk about this, there's a phrase out there called the disparity of force, right? And so when we are attacked by a person who's bigger and by a man, it's much harder to defend yourself. And so I believe that women, if they choose, they should be able to have whatever defense weapon or defense means that they have, that they want to have for themselves.
Well, it's my personal belief that every woman should be armed. I just think that. And, you know, I've always thought that. Of course, I also believe every man should be armed. I mean, an unarmed man is a subject. An armed man is a citizen. And it's not about hunting. It's just not. So let's talk about some of the fiscal issues that are going on down there. I mean, we've got, let's talk about healthcare, SB 200, which is the healthcare exchanges. We've had a lot of different bills coming through. We've tried to repeal it over and over again. And there are solutions.
Yes, there are. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that what we really would love to see, and I'm sad that that Libby Szabo and Brophy's bill, SB 40, didn't pass, that would have allowed for some across-state commerce, allowing for exchanges to go across the states. I mean, I think that that would have been one of the greatest solutions we could have allowed for, because, again, it goes back to that free market, the exchange. You know, we truly haven't had a free market in healthcare for 50 years to be able to allow for at least something to come back as a free market option for people, I think would have been great. So I think those are some of those things that we really could have seen that they took down, that they didn't allow this session.
Yeah, and all that was a bill that, say, you know, you and I sitting here as citizens of the state of Colorado, if we had an insurer in New Mexico or Kansas or Wyoming that had a better product at a cheaper price, we could buy that.
Absolutely.
Thank you for playing. We're not going to let that happen.
Right.
And you know what killed me as I was there watching that hearing?
Oh, yeah.
And the insurance companies came in and said, oh, you can't have that. We can't have that. Oh, yeah, they were very much protecting their Colorado market. Hmm. And the thing that kills me about insurance companies is they are the ones that like these mandates. I'm a single male. I have to have maternity insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. I also have to buy acupuncture insurance.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, so do you. Okay? Yeah, so do you. Well, all right. That spreads out the cost of that premium to everyone. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it doesn't cost as much for an individual to buy it because now everybody's buying it. So it appears as though it's a lower cost. But when you stack all of those different mandates onto an insurance policy, the price goes up for everyone. That is not a free market. That is, and it's just wrong.
That's right. Yeah, and, you know, only 47% of the goal for Connect Colorado has been signed up now. And, you know, when you look at the young people who are really the ones that are supposed to support this whole thing, if they pay a $95 fee or a penalty for not signing up versus $800 to $1,500 in the cost, well, which one would you choose? Of course.
Oh, I know which one I'm going to choose.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I don't understand how they feel like this is going to be a sustainable option for anybody.
Well, and they've had 250,000 people that have lost their health insurance as a result of Obamacare and the healthcare exchanges. The exchanges have set up, I think, 133,000. That number is a little bit stale, but it's roughly 130,000 people have signed up. Mm-hmm. Most of those have gone into Medicaid.
Right.
Okay, so that helps a lot. So we've got a net loss of roughly 120,000 people in the state of Colorado, and these Diane Primaveras out there tout that as a success. Mm-hmm. I don't know what world she lives in. I just don't. So what other issues are you going to make as part of your platform?
Well, let's see. You know, I think anything that that reduces regulation, that opens up opportunities, anything that gets rid of rules and laws, it's going to be, I feel like as a lawmaker, it will be hard to support things that can't, that nobody can answer the question, what problem does this solve? If it creates more problems, that's a no. But really, truly, what problem are we solving with whatever bill's coming down once we're in session? And that's really going to be the measurement that I go by for when I'm voting is truly, does this simplify things? And also, does it reduce the involvement of the government in the constituents' lives?
You know, it's funny. I had a conversation earlier today with a senator, a very thoughtful senator. I'm getting to know him pretty good. And I don't know everybody down there. I know a lot of them, but I don't know everybody. I know them, but I have never really sat down and had a serious conversation with this guy. And I just looked at him and I said, what in your mind is the proper role of government? So Mary Jo, I'll ask you the same question. What in your mind is the proper role of government?
I think certainly at the state level, the proper role of government is very small and limited to infrastructure, highways, roads, and also public safety, and not a lot more.
Man, I like that answer. No wonder we like you so much. That's good. That is very good. Now, how do you feel about when, for instance, the federal government starts putting mandates on the state of Colorado, and they always do it with the crack, okay? And by that, I mean the money that they're going to give us to install this new program. And, ooh, look at all this free money we're getting from the feds. 5 years later, that money dries up, blows away, and we're stuck with another mandate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the key word there is free money, which is actually our neighbor's money and our taxpayer money. So it's not really free, right? Right. And, you know, I think one of the things that we need to remember is the power of the 10th Amendment, and that we've got to keep states' rights in the front of our mind, and understand that we are a sovereign state of Colorado, not a sovereign nation, but certainly we have the right to do what we need to do as a state, and to exercise our right as is covered in the 10th Amendment.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. When they wrote the Constitution, they were talking about it, and when they sent the letter off to King George, they talked about the state of Britain, just like they talked about the 13 states of the Union. So yes, they did consider themselves 13 individual countries that came together with one federal government overseeing the 13 countries, if you will. That's what they did mean back in those days by the word state, that would provide for national defense.
Mm-hmm.
The things that the states could, or the countries could not do individually, the feds would do then. But they also knew that ultimately that federal government would grow out of control, as they all do, every single one of them. Mm-hmm. So I'll ask you this. Do you support an Article 5 resolution?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, again, like you said, I think there's a lot of confusion between a constitutional convention, which is not what we want, and so people get scared about that. But for you to be able to explain the difference, I think that Article 5 would be a really, really good thing. And people are getting on board all over the country and the idea of it.
It's gaining a lot of momentum. It's going to be very powerful. So, Mary Jo, where can people go to help you? What is your website? How can people get in touch with you?
Well, the website's really easy. It's my name, and I'll spell it M-A-R-I-J-O, Tinlin, T-I-N-L-I-N.com. That's the website, and you can sign up to donate, of course, and volunteer. That would be fantastic. Also, the Facebook page is Mary Jo Tinlin for Colorado. Please like us there, because that's where I post all the events that I'm attending and pictures, and, of course, we'll talk about this show and all the things that we're doing around the district.
Well, yeah, and that's correct. I mean, it's House District 33, yes?
Mm-hmm.
In House District 33, the way you're going to win that race is obviously the ground game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to have to go door to door. You're going to have to get a lot of volunteers out there. You're going to have to sell your message to 40% independents.
Yep.
Okay, and that message of freedom, in my mind, always wins.
Absolutely, you're right. And, you know, I think one of the advantages of my candidacy is that I come from the Boulder County side of the district, which can kind of be considered no man's land for for some of the Republicans, but it's a really good position for us to be in because I know folks over there. They're my neighbors. I think I can generate GOP support and enthusiasm and also hopefully change some of my unaffiliated and even maybe some of my Democrat mom friends over because they know who I am.
That'll be great. Looking forward to it. Mary Jo Tinlin, candidate, House District 33.